I was grateful to compete with the best in our sport and did not even think about getting into the top 5 or even the top 10. And it seemed so far away. And on the other hand, I was free. I was just free to race, and I was not thinking about performance. I knew I was strong. I knew I was well prepared, and I was just happy to actually live that moment and be there and be healthy. And I was just smiling the whole way. You know, when I was leaving the airplane, I was smiling, and it just felt great to be there. And then all of a sudden, I felt the energy that is just around on the island. And I don't know, I could use it to execute my performance. And yeah.
That was the 2017 and 2018 Ironman World Champion, Patrick Lange. And this is his story on the Pacing Racing Podcast. All right, what's happening, everyone? Welcome back and welcome to the first-time listeners. My name is Steven Langenhausen. I am the host of the Pace Racing Podcast. Now, I'm really amped up to say today's guest is former two-time Ironman World Champion and one of my all-time favorite triathletes, Patrick Lange. So if you followed professional triathlon in the last few years, then you've probably likely heard of Patrick, as he's been one of the most talked about triathletes out there on the circuit. It was only back in 2016 when Patrick made his Ironman debut at Ironman Texas, in which he came first place and then continued on that season with a third overall at his Ironman Kona debut. Now, breaking the run course record, this opened up a floodgate of sponsorship opportunities for Patrick, which really helped him kickstart his long course triathlon career. He then went on to win consecutive Ironman World Championships in 2017 and 2018, breaking the overall course record each year and then becoming the first ever to finish Kona in sub-8 hours. Hence his hashtag line, hashtag be the record breaker. Now, Patrick is known to go full throttle on the Big Island, but unfortunately in 2019, he had to drop out of the race, leaving many people guessing what had happened. Well, I'm excited to talk to Patrick about what happened that race day and leading up to the race, but more importantly, what is ahead going further as we start into the new 2020 race season. Now, some other themes we explore in today's podcast include his history of his early triathlon career days, his day-to-day nutrition strategies, his on-course nutrition strategy, and of course, we talk all things Kona, because nobody thinks about Ironman World Championships on a daily basis more than Patrick Lange himself. Now, one race day doesn't define an athlete, so expect Patrick back at the start line in Kona 2020 with vengeance and a desire to reclaim his title from his fellow countryman, Jan Frodeno. This is an awesome episode, so I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I did, and now, let's get into it. Now, before we dive into today's episode, I just want to quickly thank our sponsors for these episodes, which are Quintana Roo Tri and 51 Speed Shop. So if you're following me on social media right now, you would have seen me showcasing my beloved Quintana Roo PR5 tri bike that's recently been coupled with the 51 Speed Shop carbon aero bar extensions. So JP from Brown Sports has helped me immensely with putting this bike together to be the most aerodynamic and comfortable bike as possible. Now, we've done some virtual wind tunnel testing, we've done some multiple extension type testing, and we've done just different component testing, and I'm thrilled with the overall outcome. With, of course, Challenge Roth on the horizon, I wanted to know that I wasn't in over my head first off, and ultimately I was well equipped for the challenge that faces me here on July 5th. Now, I chose the PR5 because it has so many little neat perks that stood out, like the Shift Plus technology, which basically refers to the design of their down tubes. So the down tube deflects as much air as possible from the drivetrain side over to the non-drivetrain side, where the rear stay is designed to be actually quite larger. So this gives the air a smooth path to follow rather than creating turbulence on the drivetrain side. So that helps with aerodynamics huge. And you know, another reason I love them is their custom aero storage container in the rear that you keep your spare tire kit in, and it has a built-in light for visibility. And another neat thing, it also yields a 30T carbon fiber frame set and also a 6-position seat post. And the bike's just overall design is so super user-friendly and fitter-friendly, comparable to some of the other bike manufacturers that I've seen out there. Now, when you couple a bike like this with 51 Speed Shop cups and aero bar extensions, then you really can't go wrong. And as you all probably know, if you're not staying in aero bars for the entire length of the bike course, then all those watt-saving changes you make on your bike, ultimately, they just become redundant, right? So the 51 Speed Shop cops offer a ton of different mounting options and angles so you can truly find your comfort. And they also have a few options of aero bar extensions. Now I went with the Ultimate Carbon extensions with a 30 degree angle, which also have a 15 millimeter offset at the tips so that you can actually allow your hands to be as close together as possible while still leaving that room for your hydration system and bike beater to be mounted in between the handlebars. Now, this has been a game changer for me, and I've truly felt the difference in comfort since having this overall setup. So I definitely recommend it firsthand. I'm a big, big fan of 51 Speed Shop bars and, of course, the Quintanaru tri-bikes. So if you want some more insight on these brands, of course, search their names on social media, give them a follow, or JP at Brown Sports in Toronto actually sells and fits 51 Speed Shop products and Quintanaru tri-bikes all the time. So I can 100% refer you to their shop with confidence, knowing they'll take care of you in setting you up for success by identifying, of course, which bike and which extensions will work best for you. Okay, now guys, let's get into the conversation. Enjoy the podcast. So Patrick Lange, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Hello. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, good, man. No, it seems, I guess, that you're probably a little bit well-rested now after getting back from your training camp there recently in Lanzarote, right?
Yeah, recovery is still working, and still a lot of espressos over the day is needed. But other than that, yeah, we had a great camp. Wanted 100% of training that has been planned was done. No injuries, no crashes. So I'm really, really happy. And the weather was good. Actually, really strong wind. Yeah, and we had a sandstorm, which was also a pain for 3 days, where you could like just see for about 100 meters, and it was like you have been landed on Mars. It was red everywhere. So other than that, was a great camp with great compatriots, and yeah, it was good company and just fun.
Now, was that a training camp for their Erdinger alcohol-free team, or who was that for?
No, we had the Erdinger alcohol-free camp we had done in January, actually, 2 weeks of team building and training with my teammates. But the sooner you get to the season, the more individualized, of course, the training program has to be done. So the team decided to send us in individual camps and time in January, but this camp was organized by ourselves. But you know, my coach obviously coaches Boris Stein, so it was not adding a team, but it was definitely like a squad camp with athletes I have been training over the last few years a lot.
Oh, excellent. Well, that's good to hear, right? And you made perfect sense there. As we get closer to the season, you want to be more specific to your racing. So that's good. And I guess that's kind of a perfect timing for this camp, as it looks to be your first race here of the season at Challenge Salou this month. So how are you feeling about that?
Actually, the shape falls in place. So I feel totally ready to race, actually. I'm looking forward for it. I'm mentally, I'm physically prepared the best way I could be. So I'd be more than happy to race. But as you know, we have the coronavirus here in Europe, and this virus just makes up everything. So at the moment, I'd be surprised if the race will take place, because there are warnings from the government that, they say the organizers of events with more than 1,000 people participating, they want to have it canceled, or they want to have it organized on a different date. So I don't know what to do right now, because I, as one of the leading persons in the sport, maybe also have to go take the lead and saying, okay, this is a crisis where the sportsmanship goes, you know, higher than what I want to say is, I'm responsible to show an act of to the other people around there that we have to be careful and we shouldn't spread the virus anymore to older or sick person or kids, because I mean, we obviously, as young and healthy people, we are not in big danger. So I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking about what to do right now. So you actually caught me in the thinking process of what to do now. So obviously there are different options, and maybe the organizers take away the thought process by canceling the event, which is more likely at the moment.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point that you kind of brought up with this whole thing, right? And I'm sure that's going through so many people's minds as to what's going to happen with the race season. And that's good, taking the due diligence on wanting to prevent spreading it when we can, right? So who knows kind of what's going to happen, right? I guess no one could tell the future. But it's good to hear that you're still training hard for it, but you're also being cautious of what's to come, right? So I think everyone could definitely respect that. It makes a ton of sense, and it's definitely a safe approach to it. But no, that's good. And you know what? Hey, I mean, there's lots of talk about today, and we'll get into all this in a little bit here. But before we get too much into it, let's first chat about going all the way back in your triathlon career here and work our way up. And of course, you've had a ton of recent accolades. But let's talk about where it all started, like how you first got into triathlon, and you know, how did it evolve into becoming essentially a professional long course triathlete? Because you were a physiotherapist before long course career, right?
Yeah, exactly. My endurance sports career started when I was about 12 years old. We had a little race in our hometown where you have to had to ride like 20 kilometers with the mountain bike and then run afterwards. And I saw that event in the first year as a spectator, and I thought, okay, next year I have to be there, and I want to race, and I want to win that race. There's always like this dedication to win things. Before that, I was actually a go-kart racer, and I always wanted to win the go-kart races. So this drive was always there, and I saw this endurance event, and I thought, oh, that's great. There's so many spectators, because it took place in the middle of the city where I grew up, and it was just amazing to watch. And so I asked my dad to buy a mountain bike, which he did, luckily, and I started training. So I had no coach, I had no heart rate monitor, nothing. We were like 12-year-old guys, and then going into the forest and drove our hearts out, and was just good fun. And it didn't take on a whole year until I started with mountain bike racing. And yeah, I competed in cross country races at the age of 15. I tried my first mountain bike marathon, because I always felt that this more endurance long course stuff should suit me better than the short stuff, because also when I played soccer, I was always the guy running up and down, and it was just not tiring at all. I tried all different kinds of sports. I also tried track and field, but I couldn't throw, I couldn't jump, I could not sprint. The only thing I was good at was running in circles for as long as possible. And that ended in a 120 kilometer mountain bike marathon at the age of 15. And after that, I got to know a triathlon coach, because I had a crash during a mountain bike race. And this crash actually had two big impacts on my life. The first one was that I wasn't able to ride downhill properly anymore. So I was kind of afraid and kind of like blocked to ride fast in the downhill. So I was uphill. I was one of the fastest in Germany in climbing, but all the guys were passing me in the downhills. And the second thing was that I was in rehab, and I got to know a triathlon coach, and started out training on the bicycle with him. And then he said, oh, let's come and we have a swim session here and we run there. And I said, oh, that's cool. Let's try that out. And I did. And I fell in love with that great sport. And luckily we had an event just in front of our door, the Edersee Triathlon, little local race. Sorry, my doorbell's ringing. And yeah, I got to that race, juniors category, and yeah, totally fell in love with the sport and competed ever since. And actually, it was really funny because we. I'm sorry.
Bring him in the podcast.
No, I think it's a package.
Oh, there you go. Go get it.
Whatever. No. Because just a couple of weeks ago, we saw some old video footage with cassette tape film material that my dad and his friend was filming, and you can hear the. A good friend of my dad, he was standing next to him, and then they filmed the finish where I was running. I was winning that race, and they filmed my finish. And the guy next to my dad, he said, "Haha, maybe we see a future Ironman Kona champion here, huh?" And it was so funny because the situation was just unreal, and we were laughing, and yeah, it was cool. So yeah, totally fell in love, and it all ended with racing European Cups and World Cup, and started with 70.3 actually before I did my studies. So I always raced in triathlon, like in the higher categories. I always raced as a pro, even if I wasn't a pro. So I was over competing with guys like. I actually couldn't compare myself with, because I always did like the studies for physical therapy. After the studies were done, I worked part time as a physio, but always had the dream of actually competing in Ironman races and long course races. And it took quite a while until I was actually able to commit to that step into that direction. It took so I had to meet. Faris Al-Zlatan, who said, okay, he took me with him on a 30-kilometer run, which I had never done before. I think the maximum I was running for was 20K, and he was really surprised about how relaxed I was with a long run. And he said, oh man, you really have to do the Ironman stuff. And that was actually late in 2015. After that, the commitment and the goal was even clearer, but unfortunately, it was the same moment where my sponsors that I had before, because I was 3 times German Duathlon Championship, blah, blah, they quit. So I had actually no money at all, and I was about to quit my job to go full-time professional. And so I had to actually change a lot of my life around it. So I was there and just actually had the dream in Germany where when you want to be self-employed, you have to have like the health insurance needs to be private, which is about 450 euros a month. You have to pay the rent. And yeah, actually, I was about to end that whole Ironman dream before it even started. And luckily, Faris and I was able to find a sponsor that was a small sponsor, but it gave me enough money to actually just pay for my health insurance. And I was able to have my first race in Texas, leading into it as a professional. I mean, I was really living on small feet. I had nothing and just a dream. And I said, okay, at least for a year, you want to try and go the way that Faris is leading. I had total commitment on one hand, and the belief and the trust in what Faris told me and what he wrote down on the training program. And I did 100% of it, and yeah, could. Yeah, quickly feel the response of my body. I was getting stronger, and at the end, at the beginning of 2016, my first race was in the Philippines in the 70.3, and I rode away from all that strong Aussie and New Zealand guys, including Greg Alexander, and he just catched me on the run, and it was a hot and humid race, so we collected good data and good insights from that race, and then I started the Ironman in Texas, and yeah, I was able to win it straight away. Then all started.
Yeah. Yeah. So actually, and talking about this, the 2016 Ironman Texas. Now that was, of course, the game changing moment for you and totally. In your career.
Yes.
Now you placed first in what was your first basically Ironman debut. Now I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, like, what was your race plan going into that race? Like, did you have any idea of what time you might be able to finish in? Because I can assume you probably never swam, biked, and ran that distance all at once before, right?
No, never did. Of course, I never run 42 kilometers, but of course we did. We trained probably for an Ironman, so I did 6-7 kilometer swims. I did 200 kilometer bike rides and all that stuff. But I was actually, I wouldn't say afraid. Afraid is not a good word for it. But I had big respect of what will happen after the 30 kilometer mark. Because Ferris told me such stories that I overdo it a little bit now, but he said something like, okay, when you pass the 30 kilometer mark, the gate to hell opens and you will walk through that biggest pain you will ever experience. So I was running in that race, and you have to say that the bike course was shortened because of floodings in the area. And actually, after that win, Norman Stadler called me and he said, well, you're not a real Ironman. You have to prove yourself because you have to finish the full distance before. I was like, okay. Yeah. but still, I was taking the lead in that run, and I was running at 3:45 pace, which was, I didn't focus on times during that race. So I started running and I really felt like, hey, I feel amazing. And I actually had the race plan to run slightly sub 4 minutes per kilometer. And I just said, okay, I feel so good. I have to give it a try. So I just go with the flow and just run and didn't think about that gate to hell anymore. It was just, I had so much positive energy going into that race, taking that lead and absorbing all that positive energy from the spectators, and I was just flying, and all of a sudden I was at kilometer, I don't know, 38, 39. I still felt great, and I said, oh man, that's so amazing. I'm about to win that race. I could not believe it. And probably one of the best moments in my career.
For sure. No, it's huge. And it's an incredible story because a lot of listeners are probably thinking of or actually doing their first Ironman this year or within the next year. So it's pretty cool to kind of hear your story and take on it, right? Now, of course, that opened you up to your first debut at Kona, and you made the podium on it, which is amazing. And let's talk about the Big Island here, I guess. Like, for you, like, what is it about Kona that allows you to just perform so well, right? It's is it just like 1 year buildup you do just a peak in October, or like how do you prepare for this race that might be different from other athletes out there?
Actually, I'm not looking too much what my other opponents are doing, so I cannot tell what is maybe the biggest difference or so. I don't know. I felt that also the place where I took my first Ironman victory in the Woodlands in Texas was a great place to train and prepare for Ironman Kona. And I got back to the same homestay, the same family stayed for with when I was racing the Ironman. And I think that was maybe one of the biggest influence and the biggest positive point, that I could first and foremost train in good, hot, humid conditions in the Woodlands, but also having the Gibbons as my homestay family. And it actually felt like, or it always feels like coming home to them. So it's really good to have a supportive surrounding and positive energy from that family, which I really, really enjoy every time when I'm with them. Yeah, they had been a massive positive effect for me. And in 2016, now I got to that island, and actually I thought, okay, no pressure at all. I felt honored to be there, and I was grateful to compete with the best in our sport, and did not even think about getting into the top 5 or even the top 10. And it seemed so far away. And on the other hand, I was free. I was just free to race. And I was not thinking about performance. I knew I was strong. I knew I was well prepared. And I was just happy to actually live that moment and be there and be healthy. And I was just smiling the whole way. You know, when I was leaving the airplane, I was smiling, and it just felt great to be there. And then all of a sudden, I felt the energy that is just around on the island. And I don't know, I could use it to execute my performance. And yeah, I don't know what I do different, but I think going into a race without super high expectations and free and with positive attitude helped a lot.
Huge. Yeah, no, exactly. Right. And it seems like consistently you've done really well over the years in racing in general, but especially at Kona. And I think 2018 was probably a life-changing race for you, because not only did you become the first triathlete to break the sub-8 hours in Kona, but you also had the amazing proposal to your girlfriend at the time and now wife, Julia. So like leading up to this race, and you know, even during the race, like what was going through your head around this proposal? Because like, was that something that fired you up while you were racing, or were you like nervous as to how this is all going to pan out, or like what was going through your mind at the time?
2018 was actually the first year where I was the chased person all year long. And the year did not unfold the way we hoped. I felt, yeah, not weak, but it was just not the performance I was hoping for. It just felt the weight on my shoulder. And when I was training in Texas and during that, also that time of the year, the thought of proposing when I was winning, or if I was winning, yeah, sank in. And I felt that this is definitely the right call to do. So I would also have proposed even without winning, but not maybe in this public way,
right, yeah.
Which is also really important, I think. And I felt that this whole thing has set free a lot of energy, and it just fired me up in the whole build-up, and I created pictures of that moment, how it will look like, when it will happen, and it helped definitely a lot to go through all that pain and hard times in training, and also in the race. Definitely helped, yes.
For sure, right? Well, I mean, it's crazy. And like, I mean, good on you to have, that would have been a lot of pressure, you know, leading up to it on the day. I mean, not only to defend your title, but to, you know, to set a new record, but then also propose to the love of your life. I think that like that is huge. It's probably one of the best things I've seen in a long time in sport. So it was really cool to watch. And let's chat about 2019's Kona. Now, unfortunately, we all know that, you know, nobody can have a perfect race career. We're all bound to have some great races and not so great. And for the listeners who aren't aware yet, I guess, can you explain kind of what happened to you on that race day in 2019 Kona? And, you know, what was it like leading up in the race week? Did you feel good at the time? Or
I felt great. I felt great. I was really well prepared. I was totally fired up. I had good feelings. I was prepared. I felt good to be on the island again. And I felt healthy the whole week. But out of the blue, I felt sick. I felt tired, like from Thursday evening, Friday morning onwards. And I tried to put that bad negative energy away. I thought, you're just tired, and you're just starting to feel nervous. And I tried to find excuses for myself. And I woke up in the morning on race day, and I was cold sweated. I did not measure, but I think if we had measured the body temperature, we would have seen that I had a fever, and I just felt down. And I called Ferris straight away, and we thought about what to do now. Unfortunately, he was not there, and I think if he would have seen me in that moment, he probably have forbidden to race. So we decided to go to the start line and try at least. So in the water, I felt good. The warm up was terrible. I was running and felt bad. And I said to my training partner, I said, "Man, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I feel so tired. I feel so bad. I'm totally not in race mood." But as soon as I hit the water, there was this race focus, and the blinders was able to put on, and I got into the rhythm. I had a great swim, and I also think that the water temperature just helped to cool my body temperature a little bit down. So that's my only explanation for why the swim was so good. On top of that, I was really, really well prepared for the swim, because I knew that Alistair Brownlee and Josh Amberger, Jan, they will definitely set a high pace in the swim. So I was prepared for that, and I could execute what I was training for the last 6 weeks. And but as soon as I hit the highway and the temperature rose up, I felt that the fever was coming back. And after 60 kilometers, I felt dizzy. And that was also the moment where I started to realize, okay, what you're going to do right now is just not healthy. And so I was thinking what to do for 20 kilometers. I was thinking of, and on one hand, you are wearing number one in Kona. That's a thing that you dreamed about, and you are not here to quit. I mean, come on, what's wrong? But on the other hand, I knew if I try to finish and if I try to run in the heat, I would definitely put my health and my body into big danger. So I decided to pull the plug and call it a day, because yeah, I want to race again. And I think looking back to it, was definitely the right call to do, because health is always the most important thing. And yeah, it took quite a while. So I was really, really sick afterwards. It took about 3 or 4 weeks for me to actually get healthy again. So it was really bad. And looking back to it, was definitely the right call to do.
I think so.
But I don't blame anyone else. You know, I don't blame anyone. I just blame the problem, not the person, not someone else. And winning is one thing. But in 2019, definitely out of losing it, I learned even more about myself and about maybe things I needed to change. And looking back on it, it definitely put me into a better direction again.
Yeah, no, exactly, right? And I think the main thing from this, the story, the takeaway, and actually for listeners listening in too, right, is, you know, you never know how you're going to feel on race day. The only thing you can do is just train as hard as you can, and whatever happens on race day happens, right? But I think that's the smartest thing to do is, you know, if you're really sick, you know, being healthy on a good day and running an Ironman is hard on your body. So to do it sick is definitely not advised for anyone to do. So I think that was really good of you and to set an example like that, right? And looking ahead, I guess, to this year for your plans in Kona, like hopefully the whole coronavirus thing is diminishes by that point, and we're looking good for the second half of the season. But, you know, all things considering, do you have a race plan in terms of like qualifying for Kona? And are you making any changes this year? I know there's been a change in coaches, right? So has that impacted your training at all?
Yeah, there have been a lot of changes in my team and a lot of different approaches, which were because I felt that I also need a different approach to motivate myself again and to try different new things and have a little bit different training approach, working with more specialists in their fields, and that gave. Or still giving me a lot of power to start fresh and motivated into the new season. We are not ready to officially announce the whole race plan. I will qualify for Kona in a German-speaking Ironman, which is Hamburg, Klagenfurt, or Frankfurt. So this is my summer Ironman, and I think within the next 2 or 3 weeks, we will announce where we'll be starting. And until then, I'm enjoying training, and I'm really enjoying working with Björn Gesman as my new coach. And yeah, definitely approach Björn to lead me into a more successful future. So I have the feeling that it's going into the right direction.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that's great to hear, right? And, you know, let's turn the page here a little bit and let's quickly talk about nutrition. I know that's a big topic. I know a lot of listeners are actually always curious to hear about. And, you know, I think triathletes now more than ever are getting caught in the fight between the day-to-day foods they should be eating for the best performance, right? Now, you know, I've read out there that you're a vegetarian or that you're a high-fat, low-carb diet. And I've also read that you eat whatever you want to eat, right? So, I mean, let's kind of just hear it straight from you. I think that'd be the best source, right? So, you know, what's your take on day-to-day diet for competing in Ironman?
It's totally easy. I'm vegetarian, but with a good sense for my own body. And I think that's the biggest takeaway I can get. I listen to the feeling of my body, and I eat whatever is giving me a good feeling, where I feel that I don't digest for 3 days. For example, when I eat a steak, I feel that it just sticks into my digestive system for a super long time, and it just not feels good for me. So I decided to go with the vegetarian diet, but I also eat eggs and I eat cheese, I eat bread. I'm not gluten-free, I'm not vegan, I'm not keto. I just don't eat the stuff that had ice before, if you want to say
that's funny.
So yeah, and other than that, of course, I try to keep my energy level balanced. So I think it's really important to train with good high energy levels, especially if you're doing high intensity stuff or intense training sessions. Of course, I run on carbohydrates. I have some gels, a lot of carbohydrates. But on the other hand, of course, when I do long rides, easy stuff, there are also trainings that I do with empty glycogen storage just to increase my fat oxidation system. And I think you have to work on all different oxidation systems. So you have to work on the carbohydrate oxidation system as well as on the fat oxidation system. So it just needs to be a good mix. And I see some movements that are just so harsh because they're just keto or they're just based on whatever, just always sugar gain levels high. And I think the mix is still the best nutrition option, and just switch on your brain if you're training, and think before you start your training, and adapt your nutrition plan also to your training plan. I think it's really important to have periodization also in the training program, the nutrition program, adapting to your training program, and then I think it makes sense.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm glad to hear you say that, right? And I guess sometimes people get too strict with the diets, and it's nice to hear that, you know, that's how you go about it. So awesome. And I guess just quickly and briefly, I guess, would you be able to explain sort of an on-course nutrition strategy for, say, like a race like Kona? Like, do you have any specific things you do? Like, are you strict on how many carbs per hour, or is it just, you know, how you feel each hour?
So there is one strategy that works for most people that I like to share, and that's 1.5 to 2 grams per kilogram body weight per hour. So, for example, if you weigh 60 kilos you say weigh 80 kilos, maybe more realistic. You should consume about 160 grams of carbohydrates per hour during a race. And I feel that this is a strategy that works good for a lot of people. And it's also good to cover with on-course race nutrition and the nutrition you can carry on board. And I feel that's the best tip, the best advice I can give for racing a 70.3 or an Ironman.
Perfect. No, that's good. Simplicity is key. So I definitely like that. If anyone's trying to get into their early stages of getting used to a nutrition plan for their season ahead here, I think that'd be something to definitely try out on the trainer on a long bike session or a run session indoors here, just to get used to it right before.
And we're talking definitely with full glycogen storage. Of course you have to do the carb loading and you have to have gel before you race. And then, I feel that this is a good tactic. And you should definitely try in your training, and you should always, that's a common beginner mistake to try a new gel product in the race is always a bad decision. So you should try the stuff you eat during the race. You should definitely try in training, and also try the amount of carbs you take in, because sometimes if you go over a certain level, it can be really hard on your stomach.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's some solid advice there. And, I guess I think that's an excellent spot to wrap up today's chat here, Patrick. I really appreciate you coming on here. And I guess before we sign off, can you let the listeners know, I guess, where they can follow you on social media throughout your 2020 season?
Yeah, of course. If you're not following yet on Instagram, Patrick Lange 1 is the channel. I'm really happy if I can say hello to some more followers there. And I think, that's the biggest channel I use in my daily training and life. And I think it's the nicest channel to advise. So I'd be happy about for some more followers there.
Perfect, man. Awesome. No, beautiful. Thanks so much, man. Of course, we're all wishing you nothing but the best for your race season. And we'll all be rooting for you, of course, this year in Kona. And, hopefully the season kind of pans out. We'll be excited to see your race season as it unfolds. And on that, man, all the best. Take care.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. All the best to you guys. Bye.
Perfect. Cheers. Awesome. Well, that's a wrap with former 2-time Ironman world champion Patrick Lange. So thanks so much for listening in. And if you enjoy this episode, among others, then please just take a minute to open up your Apple Podcast app on your iPhone, search Pacing Racing and click the podcast, click subscribe, and then scroll down to the bottom and just leave us a quick written review. That takes less than a minute to do, but goes a long, long way in helping me out. So to all who do that, thank you so much. It's greatly appreciated. Now, other than that, guys, happy training. And if you want to train with me on Zwift, then feel free to drop me a follow by searching Steven Langenhausen. Yep, it's exactly how it sounds. So anyway, guys, take care. Chat soon. Cheers.